Oil prices rising around 5% overnight. Brent at 48.53, West Texas 46.89. And why did those prices surge? Well, because ministers from the world's biggest oil nations announced a deal yesterday in Algiers to cut output for the first time in 8 years. Robin Mills, the CEO of Camar Energy, is in the studio to try and interpret what he's seen in Algiers. Good morning to you, Robin.
Good morning, everyone.
What is the story behind this? What is the cut, and why did the price go up so much?
Well, if you look back to April earlier this year, there was, of course, a meeting in Doha between OPEC and non-OPEC major producers. But they were, at that point, they just weren't able to agree a deal. They were hoping to agree some kind of a deal to freeze production. That was the deal that was out there, so to kind of keep production at constant levels, but it fell apart primarily because Saudi Arabia felt Iran should be part of that deal, and Iran was still coming back from sanctions. Now they seem in Algiers yesterday to have got over that problem and to have reached this deal where they're going to cap the organization's overall production.
Which is a bit of a surprise. I mean, we've been virtually pouring cold water on this all week, that there would be some sort of agreement, because everybody's saying, look, we're not going there to come up with a decision, we're not going up there to cut production, it's just a general meeting. They've been, themselves have been pouring cold water on this all week. How did it happen? What's the story behind it?
Yes, I mean, this wasn't an official OPEC meeting. It was a scheduled meeting of another organisation where OPEC and others were going to turn up, but it seems to have morphed into an OPEC meeting in the middle. I think, you know, the watchers expected there would be some kind of a deal come out of this meeting, but that it wouldn't have much teeth. It would be just a kind of general agreement, and then maybe as a step towards an agreement at the next OPEC meeting in Vienna in November. But actually, you know, this deal does have more specifics than people had expected. You know, it does put an overall limit on production. And it's really happened, I think, because Saudi Arabia and Iran have been able to reach an agreement to accept that Iran reaches its pre-sanctions production, and that other countries will have to cut back to make this overall ceiling work.
But we won't know the exact percentages of cuts until the formal OPEC meeting in November, is that correct?
Exactly, you know, if even then. And that's the really tricky point, of course. If OPEC is going to cut 500,000 or even up to 1 million barrels per day, how much of that are the Saudis going to take? How much are other members going to take? And that's usually the sticking point of these kind of deals.
Well, there's a couple of tricky points here, aren't there, Robin? Let's look at two of them. First of all, it's getting out producers outside of the group, Russia particularly, to also agree to cut and then to stay cut if prices rise.
Yeah, the non-OPEC, major non-OPEC producers is an issue, and at that the moment that really means Russia. I mean, Russia's been the one that's been involved in these discussions, and part of the announcement yesterday was there would be further work with major non-OPEC producers, presumably meaning Russia, to define what they should produce. Well, I mean, the Russians may commit to freeze production again at around current levels. So that's one of the big issues.
Well, one of the other ones, I suppose, is compliance. I saw some statistics the other day which suggested that OPEC compliance over the last 20 years was certainly a lot lower than I would have thought. How likely is it that everybody in the group will do what they're supposed to?
Well, there's never anything close to 100% compliance, and I think what you normally see is that the Saudi Arabia and its Gulf allies lead the compliance, and they make most of the cuts, and then the others will have some cuts, and then over time, you know, maybe over a few months or a bit longer, those tend to erode, and they tend to get less disciplined, and production creeps up again. I think, you know, one of the big questions on this deal was Libya and Nigeria have been apparently exempt from it because they're obviously suffering from severe internal insecurity and they can't produce as much as they would like. But, you know, what happens then if Nigeria and Libya, if the situation improves and their production recovers, that'll mean that obviously somebody else then has to cut back, and it's not really clear how that will be implemented.
I mean, Libya have said that they want to up to about 900,000 barrels a day by the end of the year, up from about 300,000. That's quite an impact.
Yes, and you know, technically they could do it, but obviously they just need good enough security at their facilities, and Libya's been extremely volatile, well, for the past couple of years, as we know.
you know, talk about the lowdown here. I mean, a production freeze, just keeping the output level the same as it is at the moment, presumably wouldn't serve any oil-producing country particularly well. Same output, same price. It wouldn't do any favours for the producer because the world presumably is happy with the oil it's consuming at the moment. So how much would need to be shaved off in percentage terms of global production to have a real impact upwards on price?
Well, if you look back again at April, the last deal, the last attempt at a deal, since then, OPEC's own production has risen by about 1 million barrels per day. So if there'd been a freeze then that would, of course, have had an impact relative to where we are today. And the market, global market, is still oversupplied. In other words, oil is still going into storage because there aren't enough buyers for it. And now, this deal, if it took 1 million barrels off per day off the market, then, yeah, we'd be probably getting back to balance. At least the excess storage wouldn't be accumulating anymore.
Back to balance. So what does this mean for your medium and longer-term forecasts?
Well, I think it affects the let's say short-term and one year or so forecast, because, you know, if OPEC is limiting production, then we may not see further increases. But I think it doesn't have too much impact for us because really, most of the OPEC countries were probably also already close to their maximum. I mean, almost everybody in OPEC is producing at what for them are record levels. And there's no sign that anybody really was going to go much higher except Iraq, possibly. And, you know, and obviously maybe Libya and Nigeria if they recovered, but that's a bit out of their own control.
You talked there about storage of oil. And, I mean, this may sound simplistic, but what's wrong with countries selling almost as much oil as they want, but at lower prices? Obviously, it would force the price down, just to get the higher revenues that they need. People can store the oil, then in a year or two, when production has risen around the world on the back of cheaper oil, selling goods at affordable prices, and then re-examine a production cut in healthier economic times.
Well, I think that's always been the kind of balancing act for OPEC, right? It's, you know, do they cut production and boost prices in the short term, but affect and reduce demand, as you say, and encourage their competitors, or do they keep production high and prices low? And there's some kind of a golden mean there where they'll get the maximum revenues. Now, if some countries want maximum revenues in the short term, like Venezuela, for example, because their economy is struggling, others, you know, traditionally the Gulf countries have been able to cope with lower prices for a longer time with the expectation they'd go up in future. So there's always been that tension. Now, you know, in 2014, OPEC made the decision that lower prices for the short term were better. Now they seem to have decided that, you know, US production has fallen, demand has recovered, but it's been a long and painful process, and some cuts or at least a freeze now will shift the balance a little bit more towards higher prices.
10 seconds, Robin. What percentage of the world's output at the moment is controlled by OPEC?
Well, it's currently about 40%.
It's 40%. So the other side of it is the larger, the 60% from the non-OPEC members.
Yeah, and that's why it was so important to get Russia in particular, you know, which is another 10% on its own, into some kind of a deal.
Well, thank you very much for joining us this morning. Robin Mills, the CEO of Camar Energy. Thanks for coming to the studio.
Thank you.